order. We're short a few members of the committee. One of them is testifying on a bill, and the others will be here shortly. So we're going to go ahead and start with a public hearing on House Bill 2159. Patrick, do you want to tell us a little about it?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2159 directs that the net proceeds from the sale of the Department of Fish and Wildlife's Portland headquarters should be credited to the State Wildlife Fund rather than reverting to the general fund. And that would be the revenues above the cost necessary to pay or repay for relocation costs.
Okay. Thank you.
One other thing, Madam Chair. We do not at this time have a fiscal or revenue impact on the measure. They have not been prepared. Their staff in LFO and LRO are still working on those impacts. So
we don't know that there isn't any fiscal.
Correct.
Okay. We don't have that information available. Thank you. First up, we have Lindsay Ball and Chris Cotts from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Good morning and welcome. And I guess you're here to tell us about House Bill 2159.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. House Bill 2139 is introduced by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And give you a little bit of history as to why during the 2001 session, Senate Bill 50 was passed through the Legislative Assembly and signed by the governor, which directed the agency to sell the building that they were housed in Portland, use the proceeds from the sale of that building to effect the move to Salem at the location we're presently at on Cherry Avenue. The money that is left over from the sale and the expense of the move was to be reverted to the general fund. Knowing that since the monies that paid for the building were license and tag dollars, knowing that the federal law prohibits a reversion of money from license and tag dollars to the general fund, that would create a jeopardy for about $25 million of federal funds coming to the state through federal fund programs by the sale of excise tax on the sale of sporting goods, both fishing and hunting. We would lose that $25 million if that money was transferred to the general fund. We've brought the bill forward for consideration by the legislature to exclude that reversion to general fund of the money left over from the proceed of the sale of the building. Chris Couts, my deputy director for administrative services, can speak specifically to the money that would be left in the wildlife fund. Chris?
Sure. Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Chris Couts, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Lindsay's correct. We have been working on the fiscal to determine both paying off the certificates of participation that were still outstanding when the building was sold, as well as the move costs. It does look like we'd have about $1.6 million that would revert under current statute to the general fund. And as Lindsay indicated, we're looking to revert those monies to the State Wildlife Fund so that we don't lose the federal revenue that would come into the state. The $1.6 million is currently not budgeted in the agency's 2005-2007 governor's recommended budget, and it would go to the agency's ending balance in the State Wildlife Fund to be considered for other legislative programs within the agency. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, I guess a statement first and a question. If we get fiscal revenue and all the paperwork done, I mean, conceptually, this is something we need to do at some point. However, I guess my specific question is just an educational question. Would you just give me some examples of the types of functions that are done under the State Wildlife Fund? Just broad scoping so that we can get an idea of what this might be used for in the future, or what things could be considered in the future.
Chair Smith, excuse me, Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, the Wildlife Fund that is assigned statutorily to the agency holds all of the license and tag revenues and permit revenues that are generated, along with commercial fish receipts, all the monies that come from the sale of fish in the state through the ad valorem tax on the sale of fish, all the dedicated and obligated accounts, like access and habitat board monies, upland bird stamp monies, waterfowl stamp monies, all those dollars are held in the wildlife fund of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Of those funds, they have varied accounts and activities that they are expended on and budgeted for. But it all pertains to agency administration, field operations, and program implementation in the field.
And Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, the federal dollars that we receive, the roughly $25-plus million, those are directly for programs such as our wildlife management areas, fishing access, those types of programs that we have within the agency.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? I think we have any. Thank you. Is that all?
I think that's all. It's okay. Bottom line, we don't want to lose the $25 million of federal funds that become available to us. To kind of give you a little bit of a historic perspective, states who have reverted money lose those federal funds immediately. The last state to find themselves in that situation was Connecticut, and their funds were eliminated post-haste. It doesn't even take an act of the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service to implement a lockdown on those dollars. It's just a simple reversion, and it's done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We now have Glenn Stonebrink from the Oregon Cattlemen's Association.
Thank you. For the record, Glenn Stonebrink, Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and we oppose this bill. Be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Why? Yeah, that was my question. Representative Fire, my question was why.
Chair Smith, I didn't want to take up a lot of your time if you didn't have any questions. Representative Fire.
You just wanted attention.
Pardon me?
You just wanted attention.
Well,
you got our agenda.
Yes. You got it.
Yeah.
First of all, I didn't see anything, I didn't hear anything that says it's concrete. It says that these federal funds would be in jeopardy. And I didn't see anything that presented to you that says this is a sure thing. Secondly, I believe that the legislature knew what they were doing when they talked about these excess funds would go back to the general fund. Next, I think you have to be a little bit careful when you say that, well, the original building, because it was built with tags and license funds, that there maybe hasn't been some increase in value and those sort of things that could make up this $1.6 million that wouldn't be counted as tags. So I think that we, you know, first of all, don't have an absolute clear picture of where those funds are. But I'm not going to try to hide anything else about this. My real reason for opposing this is that the Fish and Wildlife Commission have basically slapped the livestock industry around with their approval of a wolf plan that does not do what they claim that it does, and it's being sold at as to you, even your own, a number of you who asked the commission to hold off on adopting the plan to get a better evaluation of it because of the federal court case, the Jones case. They decided that they would go ahead no matter what. We have numerous times pointed out the flaws in the plan and what it would do to the livestock industry. And it is very obvious that they're going to go ahead with that no matter what. Now, we have to be realistic, and the plan is now passed. It's in essence law. It's by reference of the rules they passed. I won't bore you with details of everything that I think is wrong with the plan. We could do that at any time if you want to If you want to, we can go through the plan line by line, and that's what you really have to do to see what's really wrong with it. It's not just a matter of the broad statements that we're going to give the livestock industry the tools to defend their livestock, or that there's going to be a compensation package, because those things don't exist. And under the federal rule right now, they can't exist, at least the taking of the wolves. What I would like them to do is to step back and be realistic that if the wolf is downlisted or delisted by the federal government, at that time, the state could have a plan that's absolutely no more restrictive than the federal government requires. Presently, the plan they have, it is more restrictive. It puts a bigger burden on the livestock industry that we can't live with. The wolf is listed under Oregon's Endangered Species Law. The wolf doesn't exist. The wolf was extirpated. It was that particular species is gone. It will never come back. The species they imported from another country is the species we're talking about. The taxpayers of this state should not bear the burden of protecting a foreign species. In fact, when our own Endangered Species Act says they have to be native. So what we've asked them to do is to remove the wolf from Oregon's Endangered Species List, which takes the burden off of our taxpayers. And if the federal government wants us to have a plan to protect their wolf, then they get to pay for it. And so I know that's a long answer, but obviously we've given this a lot of thought and studied it for quite some time. And I think it's way beyond just the livestock industry that, of course, I work for and try to protect. There's the taxpayers. There's just good old common sense that's involved with this.
Thank you. Did that answer your question? Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Al Elkins from the Oregon Hunters Association. Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. The Oregon Hunters Association is in support of House Bill 2159. We supported Senate Bill 50 that Director Ball alluded to earlier, directing the sale of the Portland headquarters during the legislative session of 2001. And I must say I'm a little embarrassed, but it was my understanding at that time that the money left over from the sale would be put into the state wildlife fund, and we had discussions similar to the ones we're having today, and obviously I was surprised when the bill came out. So we supported the concept then of doing what we're doing today, and we support it now. I might refer you to a letter that I have, a copy of a letter from the United States Department of Interior directed to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, which basically outlines what ifs if they do not transfer this money into the state wildlife fund.
Could you provide Janiel with a copy of that, and we could
yes,
get the committee
members? Yes, I don't know if it's been handed out or not.
Okay.
But in the second paragraph, the last three lines basically says either do it or you're going to lose. You're in jeopardy of losing some of your grant program monies, both on the wildlife side and the sports fish restoration grant program side. So I do think this is real, and I do think we need this bill. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you very much. Phil Donovan?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, my name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, the Association of Northwest Steelheaders, and the Oregon Guides and Packers Association. Here in support of House Bill 2139, just a little bit of history. You know, the move of the department headquarters was a very sensitive subject when it was initially brought up.
It's House Bill 2159.
Excuse me.
I think someone else said 2139. I didn't correct him, but I just want to make sure you knew.
For the record.
For the record.
Yes, that's right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
A lot of folks were concerned at the time of this move because it was going to be the sale of a building that was literally built on the backs of hunter and angler dollars. And so there was a lot of concern about, you know, well, we're going to move this building, or it's going to be sold, they're going to go into a lease structure. Is this really a good thing to do? At the same time, there was a lot of recognition that the building itself needed a lot of expensive updates, and there was also the perceived disconnect that between a Portland-based Department of Fish and Wildlife and a Salem-based legislature and governor's office. So when this legislation passed, there were a lot of people who were holding their breath, wanted to see that this would be a good thing. Today, now we've got a cost-effective move that has been implemented or accomplished, and our expectation is that any leftover hunter-angler dollars would fund department activities. This is especially important given the support that hunters and anglers gave last session to a fee increase that was the largest in the history of that agency. So in saying all of this, what I'm trying to get to the point is we need to do everything possible to manage the Department of Fish and Wildlife so that no further fee increases are needed for as long as possible. And keeping these dollars in the wildlife fund is critical towards that end. So with that, I'll close. Appreciate the opportunity to address the committee.
I just have a quick question. How was the dollars that built that building from the was it built from the wildlife fund?
I would actually, what accounts that came from, Chair Smith, I would want to refer to the agency staff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
That's a good question.
I think that was the only question I had. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else here who wants to comment on that? Or we could ask Mr. Ball, Director Ball, to come back and just kind of tell me what that building was built from. That would be helpful. If you...
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I believe the question is, was the building in Portland paid for by license and tag fees? Is that the basic question?
Yeah.
The answer to that question is yes. We went back through the records and researched the budgets and the expenditures for the certificates of participation on the building, and it was all paid for by other funds. We can, Chris Couch, the Deputy Director of Administrative Services, can deliver those documents to you if you would like them.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to clarify it for the record. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Seeing no further people to testify, I'll close the hearing on House Bill 2159, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2340. Patrick, do you want to tell us a little about that?
I'd be glad to. Thank you. House Bill 2340 authorizes boards of rural fire protection districts to create fees for any services that those districts provide. It stipulates that the fees may not exceed the cost of to the district for providing those services. This measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue, and therefore we have received a notice of potential revenue impact, which is the equivalent of a hall pass, so revenue will not be issuing a revenue impact statement until it goes to the Revenue Committee, and we have a no fiscal impact on the measure.
Thank you. A hall pass.
That's what they call it. It's
I know. Yeah. Insider baseball. Okay, thank you very much. Genoa Ingram, Oregon Fire District's Director. And I'm not sure. And Robert Blackmore, is that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I'm Genoa Ingram with the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, also representing Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue and Clackamas Fire 1. And with me is Bob Blackmore with Jordan Schrader, legal counsel for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. The Oregon Fire District Directors Association was organized in 1950 to assist those elected members of fire districts, and the association represents approximately 250 districts across the state. We requested House Bill 2340 because currently we believe the statutes are unclear with regard to the authority of fire districts to be able to charge fees for those activities that are within the scope of services provided by a district. Attached to my testimony, I'll let you review that at your leisure, is a matrix that I was asked to prepare by the Special Districts Association that shows statutory authority for each of the districts, the major districts, to be able to charge fees. As you can see, with respect to the fire districts, it is unclear with regard to their authority. The interesting thing about this issue is we've had legal opinions on both sides of the issue that, yes, it's proper to charge fees to recoup some of the costs of the services provided. We've had legal opinions indicating that, no, you may not charge fees and recoup the costs for the services provided. We thought that we would get to the bottom of it by asking a legislator to pose the question to legislative council. And the response that we got back was that, yes, a fire district may, so long as that authority is contained within their charter. And we were just completely baffled because special districts do not have charters. So we are just trying to clarify the statute, put fire districts on the same level playing field as municipal fire departments and other special districts. The only thing that I would add is we understand that it does have a revenue impact. I'm not quite sure why that is. We don't expect a lot to change. I think this is one of those situations where, because of the varying legal opinions, we're here really begging forgiveness rather than asking opinions, because there are a number of fire districts that are already doing this, and I probably shouldn't say that on the record, but it is what it is. And so we're not quite sure why the subsequent referral to revenue, but we plan to work through that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Jamila? Okay. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Oh, yeah, Representative.
Could you just give me a few samples of the fees so that I understand the background? Because I do sit on revenue. So if it's referring, then I'll be the one that stands up in revenue and says it's good or bad. So,
Representative Boquist, Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, that detail did not go unnoticed. So, yes, we are prepared to do that. I would actually like for Mr. Blackmore to address those issues, if that's okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Boquist?
No.
Okay. Blackmore?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Blackmore. I'm an attorney. I'm with firm of Jordan Schrader, and I'm general counsel to Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, and hope I can answer any questions you may have here today, and also want to establish a record as to the foundation and the need for this particular legislation. Special districts, especially 478 districts, they exist as a creature of statute, and they have the express authority granted under the statute only, and those powers that are implied under the statute. And that is where we have the disconnect here in terms of what is implied, and that is a matter of legal interpretation of what is necessarily implied. Under the law of Oregon, the rule is that it is strictly construed against a government entity as to the powers that you have. If it's not expressly stated and cannot be reasonably implied, then you do not have that power. We are very different from home rule authority entities such as cities and counties that have authority to establish their own rules, to have charters and so on. We exist under the strict interpretation of the statute. There is a conflict in legal opinion as to what is necessarily implied authority, and we have some counsel in Oregon saying it's necessarily implied, others saying no. We have taken the position that this is something that needs to be clarified by the legislature because, as has been mentioned, the districts are getting conflicting interpretations of the law, and we think it is necessary and appropriate to go forward. With respect to your question of what this might cover, for example, pyrotechnical and special effects. In the press recently, there's the Rhode Island fire of Great White, where they had the pyrotechnic effects on a concert, over 100 fatalities. I believe it was about 183. We have no authority to have any sort of permit fees, inspection fees, etc., with regard to that type of an event. There are other things, carnivals and fairs, explosives, flammable or combustible liquids, liquefied petroleum gases, haunted houses, fire code inspections, and so on. There are a number of services that we do now that we cannot charge fees for and are very specific and unique. There are some areas that we can charge fees, such as copies of public records and so on. Those are established by other statutes. But we're very limited in what we can do at this point. And then there's a real need to try and clarify that we do have some authority to do this so that the boards of special districts can take appropriate action where necessary and we can provide these services.
Follow up, Madam Chair, to the question I asked earlier. What type of fees would we be, are we looking for forgiveness on? You were very general, but I'll have to grab some specifics out here, and mind you, I'm in support of this, but I want to know what it is we're in support of.
The fees, as the bill is prepared, are those that are actual necessary costs providing the services. Those have to be approved by the boards of the special districts, and those have to be adopted through public hearings and in that process. So I think each district is going to look at its constituency and its issues as to whether or not they would have fees and the scope and necessity of those fees, but they would also need to document that those are the actual costs in providing the services.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. You didn't answer my question.
Okay.
What specific types of fees are we talking about that we need forgiveness on that we've already been charging that we need to go back and fix this with?
Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, I'm going to just take a stab here. I spent about a week surveying various fire districts of different sizes. For example, EMT calls, I think, were one of the situations, and legal counsel will correct me if I wade into an area here where I may get myself into trouble, but EMT calls were one of those situations where, for example, if there is a district near a freeway and they are responding to occurrences from individuals who maybe do not live within the district and they're having to go out to treat people outside of their district. And I'm sure when our representatives from TVFNR and Clackamas Fire 1, who are actually in the trenches, literally, will be able to give you some additional examples. But that was one of the ones that I heard mostly.
Yeah. We do have those gentlemen here who are going to testify in a moment, so I think they can answer further on that.
Oh, thank you. Thank That'd you. Be helpful. Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's Alec Jensen. And then Kyle Gorman of Clackamas Fire District 1. Do you want to come up together or separate? Or?
Come on.
Okay. Welcome. I'm here to answer all those other questions, huh?
We are.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alec Jensen. I'm the Executive Officer for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. As some of you may know, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue is a special service district. We serve about 400,000 people in 9 cities, portions of 3, unincorporated portions of 3 counties in the Portland metropolitan area. I'm going to be careful not to be redundant and cover ground that's already been covered, but I suppose the first theme I want to advance here is why these fees are important to us. As you know, special service districts, at least fire districts, unlike cities and some of our contemporary special service districts, are wholly property tax funded local governments. We virtually get 100% of our revenue from property taxes, and we, like all local governments, are under a voter mandate to diversify our revenue stream. Why we are in support of 2340 is simply asking you to put that tool in the toolbox of our elected officials. It's not suggesting that they would exercise that. It's just simply a tool that we'd like to have in the toolbox. It seems like each session we come down here as fire districts and there's some issue that seeks to establish a level playing field, if you will, with cities. And Genoa talked about municipal fire departments. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue is the fire department for 9 cities. 9 cities have chosen to receive their fire protection services through a special district form of government. Last session we were here dealing with an annexation issue. The session before that we were dealing with a fuel tax issue. As the fire department, albeit organized as a rural fire protection district, we believe it's appropriate to have the same tools in our policymakers' toolbox as the cities have. I think Mr. Blackmore gave you a good, good description of why this bill is important. I'm always hesitant to characterize something as housekeeping. It seems like a gross oversimplification, but this really is a housekeeping bill. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue charged some of those fees a few years ago. Based on the opinion of legal counsel, we suspended charging those fees because we didn't believe we had the authority. In terms of what we might charge for, I think Mr. Gorman from Clackamas District 1 is prepared to answer some of those questions. I'll be happy to stay and do any follow-up as necessary.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kyle Gorman with Clackamas County Fire District Number 1. We are a rural fire protection district in Oregon, but I think rural is a bit of a misnomer. We serve the area in Clackamas County from the Multnomah County line south to Clarks and from the Willamette River east to what's now the city of Damascus. We are very much an urban fire agency. I think the issue to us is, while there is a revenue component, I think the issue to us is more a public safety component. Our fire marshal's office has become frustrated over the past few years. We conduct over 5,000 fire inspections every year, and most of those most of the businesses in our community are very, very good about their fire inspections. If there are issues they need to resolve, they resolve those fairly quickly. Of those 5,000 last year, 177, about 3 or 4%, needed to be inspected for a third time. So they hadn't corrected the problem after two times. So they had to have a third inspection. Of those, about a quarter needed to be inspected a fourth time, and even more needed to be inspected a fifth time. And the problem for us is we have no way to create an incentive for people to solve the fire safety problems that are in place when we go to inspect. So we can't create any incentives for them to make the improvements that are really important for life safety. Now, I guess it's probably more accurate to say we don't have any way to create disincentives for them to continue to be unsafe. We would expect, from our perspective, we would expect to create a fee for the third or fourth inspection, certainly not the second inspection, but after three or four inspections, people really need to get their fire safety issues fixed. And we would expect that those numbers of re-inspections would go down dramatically if we had the opportunity to create some incentives for them to do that. Again, we agree with, in certain cases, aligning in some ways with the authority of cities, but for us, it's really a fire safety issue. Representative Boquist, you asked for some issues about what might be forgiven. I think probably the primary issue is ambulance service. We have literally scores of fire districts in the state that are providing ambulance service. They're authorized to provide ambulance service. They're providing very good service throughout the state, and we're not really entirely sure whether they have the authority to charge the federal government and others for doing that service. So I think without clear direction, it would put a number of emergency medical service agencies at risk in the state.
Does it answer your question?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do have a comment for the testimony, and it really doesn't apply. The reason I asked the question, Madam Chair, was that the Revenue Committee is not quite the same as the Agricultural Committee.
I'm sure. It's intended that way.
So I'm prepping, having seen that this is going to be a referral, and I see that my my fellow brother across the aisle, Representative Haas, is here, the Revenue Committee, the questioning will be much more intense. And this is kind of a preparatory thing to, for a better word, shoot around across the bow so that they're prepared to answer those tough questions that I'm sharing. Because I really do support this. So thank you.
Any other questions? I just want to thank you, and thank you to all our fire districts across the state for all the good work that you do.
Thank you.
I live in a rural part of Multnomah County. Without local fire district, They're there for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Anybody else here want to testify on this bill? 2340. I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2340. Representative
Boakers. Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2340 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue with prior reference.
Thank you, Representative Boakers. He has moved House Bill 2340 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a referral to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. And I'm sure there'll be many more questions there. Any discussion? With that, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Boakes?
Yes.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Hass?
Aye.
Representative Roseland?
Aye.
Representative Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Smith?
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Thank you. I'll close the work session at House Bill 2340, and committee, we are adjourned.